Well, today I wanted to talk about the Gram-Schmidt process. And that's a process for converting an independent set of vectors into an orthogonal set of vectors which span the same set. So supposing you have given, you're given vectors U1, UM. These are vectors in RN. And supposing that they're linearly independent. Actually, if they're not, then the process still can be done. You will know at any given stage at some point whether the vectors are linearly dependent, if they are indeed. In fact, you will see exactly which vector to delete. But to start with, it's simplest just to start with a linearly independent set of vectors. And the problem is to convert. So we're going to convert this set. So we're going to convert this set of vectors into an orthonormal set, an orthogonal set, say V1, V2, Vm, in such a way that this is important for the process, because as we're constructing the orthogonal basis, we're going to be using the formula for orthogonal projection. And to use that, we need an orthogonal basis. So basically, we're going to partially construct the orthogonal basis. And on the basis of what we constructed so far at any point, we're going to use that to construct the next one. So we're going to kind of pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, if you like. So as we go or climbing up a mountain, you're going to put in some clamps and then using those to go to the next level. So and this is the key thing, such that, say, Wi, which is the span, say, of the first I vectors, the original vectors, is the same as the span of V1 through Vi. In other words, we're going to be constructing as we go the U's into an orthogonal base which span the same set, the same initial set of vectors, and then we're going to use that to go to the next stage to construct the next V. So let's just go and do the process. So first we're going to take, of course, we'll take V1. We just take it to be U1. So that's the first step. And certainly we have W1, which is a span of U1, is a span of the single vector V1. So the next step, what we're going to do, is we want to take our vector U2, which probably is not. If it's not, we want to make it orthogonal to U1. So what we do is we're going to subtract off from U2 the orthogonal projection onto the space spanned by U1. So we're going to take here, it's going to be U2. And then minus the orthogonal projection onto W1 of U2. So in other words, if we subtract off a vector from a vector U2, its orthogonal projection onto the subspace W1, we're going to get a vector that's perpendicular to W1. If U2 happened to be a scalar multiple of U1, that we would get zero in that case, because that orthogonal projection would be zero. It would be the perpendicular component would be zero. So in this case here, so we can see at this point, so this is, we want to write this out, this is equal to, let me put it over here. This is U2 minus U2 dot V1 because W1 is spanned by V1. So over V1 dot V1, V1. That's the familiar formula for orthogonal projection of a vector onto a one-dimensional subspace. We did that in R3. It's the same formula, but the formula works also in Rn. There's no difference in the formula. So, okay. So now it's clear, in this particular case, you see that V2 and V1 are linear combinations of U1 and U2. So they are certainly, V1 and V2 are in the span of U1 and U2. They're in W2. But you can also solve for U1 and U2 in terms of the Vs. So the U's are in the span of the Vs. So the two things span the same set. Okay. So we've maintained the fact that the span of U1 and U2 is the same as the span of V1 and V2. We haven't changed that fact. Then now we go on to the next stage. Now we're going to take for V3, for example, we'll subtract from U3 its orthogonal projection. We want a vector. We want to orthogonally project U3 onto the space spanned by U1 and U2, which is the same as the space spanned by V1 and V2. What we want to do is we want to subtract from U3 something in the span of U1 and U2, which is such when I subtract that from vector W, I get a vector which is perpendicular. So this is what I'm doing at this stage, subtracting off the orthogonal projection of the vector orthogonal projection onto W2. That's the space spanned by the first two. First of all, I started with a line, and then I had a vector U2, and I subtracted from that vector its orthogonal projection onto the line, so I got a vector perpendicular. Now I have two vectors. I have a plane, two-dimensional thing, space spanned by U1 and U2. And I actually have also an orthogonal base for it at the same time. So this is what I say we're going to. Now it's easy to take the orthogonal projection of the vector V3 onto the span of U1 and U2. I use the orthogonal basis I've just constructed, V1 and V2, to actually use the explicit formula for the orthogonal projection to do it. So then I just take U3, and this is U3 minus U3 dot V1, V1 dot V1. And then I have it times V1, and I have to subtract out from that U3 dot V2, V2 dot V2 times V2. So that's now, V3 is now a vector which is perpendicular to the span of U1 and U2. And V3 cannot be zero here because if it were zero, then U3 would be in the span of U1 and U2. So because the projection of U3 onto W2 is a linear combination of U1 and U2. Now U3 cannot be a linear combination of U1 and U2 because U1, U2, U3 are linearly independent. If it so happened that my set U3 was a linear combination of U1 and U2 and U3, and I didn't see it, then I would discover it at this point. And then I could have just at this point, well, if that happens, I'm just going to delete U3 from my set. It's a superfluous generator. I didn't have the independent set to start with, so let me just delete it, and I'll just shorten the set. So as you go here, you don't have to really check for independence. You can actually, as you go, you can modify the original set to take into account possible vectors, possible dependence relations in the original set. But that's just built in. So in this case, again, you see that V3 is in the space spanned by U1, U2, U3, because V1 and V2 are linear combinations of U1 and U2. And V3 is a linear combination U1, U2, U3, therefore, by the formula. So V1, V2, V3 are in the span of U1, U2, U3. On the other hand, you see from the formulas, I can solve for U1, U2, U3 in terms of V1, V2, V3, because the dominant term is U3 on the left, on the right-hand side. So U1 is V1, U2 is V2 minus that linear minus the scalar plus that scalar multiple V1. U3 is V3 plus a linear combination of V1 and V2. So you can see that the U's are linear combinations of V's, the V's are linear combinations of the U's, so they span the same space. That's important. Okay. In general, if you have a set of vectors and you subtract off from any given vector a linear combination of the preceding vectors, you don't change the span at any time. Okay, so then we just continue. We just continue at the I stage. We would have it'd be ui minus the projection on, say, wi minus 1 of ui. And this would be ui minus the orthogonal projection of ui onto the space span by v1, u1, u2, ui, which is the same as the space span by v1, v2, vi. And so I can use the formula for the orthogonal projection. You just use the v's instead of the u's. Oh, I forgot. Forgetting the vector. There's a vector v1 here minus ui dot v2, v2 dot v2, v2, and minus, and then the last one is v ui dot vi minus 1. Vi minus 1 dot vi minus 1, and then vi minus 1. So in other words, I'm subtracting off from ui its orthogonal projection onto the space span by u1, u2, ui minus 1, which is the same as the space span by construction v1, v2, vi minus 1. And using that fact, I can use the vi's instead of the ui's to get the orthogonal projection of ui onto the space span by the preceding ui's, because I have an orthogonal basis for the space span by the ui's preceding, the vectors preceding ui, which is wi minus 1. Okay, let's just do an example. That's the Gram-Schmidt procedure. It's just as simple as that. It's just a generalization of the ordinary formula for computing orthogonal projections. And see, we have to do this in R3. You can always get around using the Gram-Schmidt by using the cross product. The cross product, if you have two vectors which are perpendicular, you can always take the cross product and give you a third. But in Rn, we don't have such a thing. And you really have to do this process to get an orthogonal basis. OK, so let's just do an example. So let me take u1 to be, say, the vector 1, minus 1, 0, 0. And say u2, this is the vector 1, 0, minus 1, 0, and u3 to be the vector 1, 0, 0, minus 1. And again, so I'll have w here is the span of u1, u2, and u3. Now, it's pretty clear these vectors are linearly independent. You can check that out. But we'll see, we'll discover it in the process as well, that none of the vi's we get will be non-zero, will be zero. OK, so now let's construct the v's. So v1 is just u1, which is this vector 1, minus 1, 0, 0. And v2, this is equal to u2, again, minus the orthogonal projection, so u2 dot v1, v1 dot v1, v1, that's u2 minus its orthogonal projection onto the span of v1, which is the same as the span of u1. And so this particular case, this works out to u2, which is 1, 0, minus 1, 0, minus, now u, what is that? That's a u2. u2. So I take u2, which is 1, 0, minus 1, 0, and I dot that with v1, which is my u1, and I'm going to get 1. and divided by the inner product of V1 with itself, which is just 2, and then times V1, which is 1 minus 1 half, 0, and 0. And this works out here, it's 1 minus a half. Well, let me take a common denominator, take a half outside, and then I will get 2 minus 1, which is 1. I will get 1. And then I will get minus 2 and 0. Okay. So that's the, now you can just check. You should always check it as you go. That should be a vector which is perpendicular to V1. Okay. It's, if you haven't done any, it's certainly a linear combination of U1 and U2. And if you just check it, that yes, you do, it is indeed, it's orthogonal to the vector V1. Okay. Now, to continue, if you look very carefully in the formulas for the orthogonal projections, in computing the orthogonal projection, I can replace any vector VI in the formula by any scalar multiple of it. Because if you look at U3.V1, V1.V1 times V1, if I were to multiply V1 by C everywhere in there, so I'd have C V1, which would come out to give me a C, I'd have a CV1 from the vector, which will come out. I'll get a C squared in the numerator. And then CV1 dot CV1, I'll get a C squared coming out. So that will cancel. So in other words, in computing the orthogonal projection, in any case, you can replace the orthogonal vectors that you get by any scalar multiple of them. It just helps in the arithmetic. So what I would do is I would just forget about that. Because when I get my orthogonal basis, my orthogonal vectors, I can multiply the orthogonal vectors by any non-zero scalar. I still will get an orthogonal set of vectors, and so the set is changed, but you will still get an orthogonal set of vectors which spans the same set. Later on, anyway, when you're going to be dividing to convert an orthogonal set into an orthonormal set, you're going to have to divide by the length. Anyway, and it's a lot simpler to do away with the fractions, to take them out, to have a simpler vector. Okay, so now I'm going to use the vector without the half to do the computations at the next stage. So my vector V3 is going to be I'm going to take from U3, I'm going to subtract off its orthogonal projection onto the space band by V1, V2. So I have my U3, my vector U3 is 1, 0, 0, minus 1. And I'm going to subtract from that a scalar multiple of V1, which is the inner product of V3, of U3, with V1, which is 1, divided by the length of V1, which is 2. Times V1, which is 1 minus 1 half, 1 minus 1, 0, 0. And then I'm going to have to subtract off from that U3 dot V2, U3 dot V2. V2 is already here, and I'm going to use instead of V2, I'm going to forget about the fraction there. So I'm going to take U3 dot V2, which is going to be, again, 1, right? U3 dot V2. Is 1, and then divided by the length, by the inner product of V2 with itself, which is, in this case, 6. Right? It's 6. V2 dot V2 is and then times V2, and V2 is 1, 1, minus 2, and 0. Now, this is very error-prone, so you have to be really careful doing a lot of arithmetic with fractions here. And I guess we use calculators too much these days. We've kind of our skills with doing it. You're not allowed calculators, by the way, on the final, so you better practice a bit. Okay, so here what I'm going to do, is there a problem? Is it okay? Okay. Now again, I'm going to take common denominators here. I'll take a sixth as my common denominator. I'm going to take out a sixth. And if I do that, then the coordinates of V3 get multiplied by 6, and the coordinates of the other one get multiplied, without the fraction, get multiplied by 3. So I'm going to get, let's compute the first coefficient. It'll be 6 minus 3, which is 3, minus 1, which is 2, if I'm not mistaken. And then the next I'm going with 0, and then I'm going to have 3, 6, minus 3, 6, times minus 1, so I'm going to get, I'm taking out the 6, so I'm going to get 3, and 3 minus 1, which is 2. Okay. And then the next one I'm going to get, 0, 0, and then plus 2. Oh, okay. Don't need a plus sign. In the last one, I'm going to get minus 6, 0, 0. So I get minus 6. So that's the orthogonal projection. Well, that's V3, that's U3 minus its orthogonal projection. So that should be a vector which is perpendicular to V1 and V2, or which, since they span the same space, should be perpendicular to U1 and U2. And you can check it is indeed correct. Oh, yeah, yeah, sure, absolutely. So 1/3, 1, 1, 1. You should always bring it to its suitless. And that third, I can always forget about it. And so I could, for example, if I want to forget about it, I claim, so therefore I could say that, but therefore, V1, V2, V3 is my orthogonal basis, but I could just as well get rid of those fractions. So I would say that U1, which is therefore 1, minus 1, 0, 0, and then the second one minus the fraction 1, 1, minus 2, 0. And the third one, 1, 1, 1, minus 3, is an orthogonal set of vectors. It's an orthogonal basis for W1, I should say. Or W. Okay? Because now the W was spanned by U1, U2, U3, and I've replaced them by an orthogonal set of vectors. So now I have an orthogonal basis for my space, my set W. And that's very nice, because now I can use all the formulas for orthogonal projections if I wanted to. Let's do an example. Supposing I want to, so let me take a vector V now. Let's say 1, 2, 3, 4. And we want to find the orthogonal projection onto W. Okay, so we want to find that. So that's very easy now. So therefore the projection, orthogonal projection onto W of the vector V would be V dot V1 over V1 dot V1, V1 plus V dot V2, V2 dot V2, V2 plus V dot V3, V3 dot V3, V3. That's the orthogonal projection of the vector V onto W. So here I'm using these vectors as my V. So this would be my vector V1. I'll use this as my vector V2. And this is my vector V3. As I said before, the formula is not changed by replacing the VIs you get by scalar multiples of them. So you might as well choose the ones that are simplest for the calculation. Okay. So this is just going to be equal to, well, V dot V1 is 1. Minus 1. So it's 1 minus 2 divided by V1 dot V1, which is 2 times V1. So V1 is 1 minus 1, 0, 0. And then plus V1 dot V2. In that case, I'll have, what do I get? 1, 3, oops, am I doing it right? Do I get 0 there? Well, V dot V2 is 1 plus 2, which is 3, minus 6, right? Pardon? Oh! Okay. See? 3 minus 6 is minus 3. Divided by the length of the square of the length of V2, the inner product of V2 with itself, which is 6, times V2, which is 1, 1, minus 2, and 0. And then the last, I would take V dot V3. So V3, so I would here, I would have 1 plus 2 plus 3. Which is 6, 6 minus 12 is minus 6 divided by 12 and into the vector 1, 1, 1, minus 3. And a common denominator there, I guess, is, not a half, yeah, a half. So I'll take out minus a half. If I take out minus a half, all the coefficients are minus a half. And so all I have to do is now add the inner part. So I'm going to get 1 plus 1, which is 2. I'm going to get 3. And then minus 1 plus 1, 0. 1. And then the other one is going to be minus 2 minus 1. And then I'm going to get minus 3. So that's the orthogonal projection, okay, onto W. Again, notice that it's orthogonal. What would be the orthogonal projection of? What would be the perpendicular projection of a V? The projection of V perpendicular to W. Let's compute that. Running out of space. So what would that be? I would have to take from V, I would have to subtract off this vector, and I would get the perpendicular projection. So let's just do that. Do that. So if I want to compute, say, the perpendicular projection of V onto W, which is the same thing as the V minus the projection of V onto W, which also is what we call, it's also the projection onto W perpendicular of V. They're all the same thing. In this case, what is, let's just see what that is. So in this particular case, this is V, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I would have to subtract off the projection which I just got, which was minus, minus a half, so that would be plus 1 half of 3, was it 1? Minus 1, minus 3. And so this would equal to 5 halves. And then 5 halves, 5 halves, and 5 halves, which is 5 halves into 1. No. Why? Because that's the projection. If you multiply scalar, you change it. Right? In the computation of that, the v's that I used in the computation of that, I can get rid of. But that is a vector, and I'm not going to use it. That is the projection. That is the orthogonal projection. And so if I get rid of the fractions, I change the vector. I stretch it. So it's changed. So it's immoral to do that. Although it's, you would think that, you know, sometimes our minds goes on autopilot. What you do before, it seems to be okay. But that you have to be a little bit on guard of. You get seduced into doing something which looks right, but actually is quite wrong. But sometimes you do it, but you don't realize later what you did. And then it's a devil of a problem to actually find that mistake, because it's sometimes very subtle. Okay. You should get used to finding your own mistakes. If you're doing web work faithfully, you have to check a lot of things. Where did you go wrong? Okay. What is W perpendicular? Can anyone give me this a basis for it? First of all, what's its dimension? What is the dimension of W perpendicular? Well, to compute that, you have to know the dimension of W, which we just discovered was 3. So it's 4 minus 3. The complementary dimension in R4 to 3 would be 4 minus 3, which is 1. So we know it's one-dimensional. So all to compute a basis, all I have to do is find any non-zero vector in there. Well, can you give me a non-zero vector which is orthogonal to all the vectors in W? No, it's staring you right in the face. The vector all ones, yeah. It's that. So W perpendicular is a hyperplane. It is in R4. It's the solution space. It's a set of all vectors which are orthogonal to 1, 1, 1, 1. So in other words, what is it? It's the, if you like, it's the null space of that matrix. 1, 1, 1, 1, which is the solution space of the equation, homogeneous equation, x1 plus x2 plus x3 plus x4 equals to 0. So the space W, when you give it a basis, actually you're describing it parametrically. The vectors in it are all linear combinations of v1, v2, v3. So it's SV1 plus TV2 plus, say, RV3. And those S, T, and R can be arbitrary scalars. So those are the parameters. This is your parametric description. But it also has a description as the solution set of a system of equations. As I said, remember in the course before, there are basically always two ways of describing a subspace, either parametrically by giving a generating set or a basis, or you can describe it as an intersection of planes. In this case, hyperplanes, because we're working in higher dimensions. In R3, a line is an intersection of two planes. So always, a plane is a plane. But in R3, it's an intersection. So you can always, any subspace of R3 can be written as an intersection of planes. And the same as works in general. This is basically what we've shown. Let me give you another example. Is there any questions on that? I think the procedure is fairly straightforward. You just have to practice it a bit to get used to it. So let in this case, let me take let W be the span. I'm going to take two vectors this time. Say, oops, I don't want that. So I have now. I've just these are my. This will be my vector u1, and this will be my vector u2 here. So I just arrange it so that they're not perpendicular. The other two were perpendicular. So supposing that the problem is to compute a basis for W perpendicular. Okay. There are actually two ways of doing it. One way, W perpendicular consists of all the vectors x1, x2, x3, x4, which are orthogonal to those two. So it's you can also compute it as the solution space of the system of equations x1 plus x2 minus x3 equals 0, x1 plus x2 plus x3 plus x4 equals 0. So if you solve that by Gaussian elimination, you're going to find a spanning set for W perpendicular. I'm going to give you another way using orthogonal projections. So in this particular case, I'm going to, u1 and u2 are not zero. I'm going to replace u1 and u2 by their, so I'm going to take v1 to be u1, and I take v2 to be u2 minus the orthogonal projection of u2 onto the span of v1. So here I'll take, so that's going to be equal to, so this is going to be equal to u2, which is 1, 1, 1, 1, minus u2 dot v1, which is u2 dot u1, which is, 1 plus 1, 2 minus 1. So it's 1 divided by the inner product of v1 with itself is, which is u1, is 3, into 1, 1, minus 1, 0. And this is going to be the vector, I'll take out a 3, 1 third. And the vector will be that's left is going to be 2 and 3 plus 1, I guess, 4, and then 4. Is that going to be right? 3, sorry. 3, 3. There's something wrong here. Because it has to be orthogonal to, oh no, that's right. Is it, okay. Is that right? Is that correct, 2 so far? I'm taking out a third. So I'm going to get 3 minus 1, which is 2. And I'm going to have 3, again, minus 1, which is 2. And I'm going to have 3 plus 1, which is 4. And I'm going to have 3, 3. OK? Anyway, the third I can get rid of. So here I have. So therefore, the vectors, therefore I have at this point the vector 1, 1, 1, 1, and the vector 2, 2, 4, 3 on an orthogonal basis. For W. Oh, right. Yeah, that's okay. Gotcha. Okay, I'm making mistakes. You guys make mistakes. Be careful. You picked the wrong one. Okay, so it's the first vector u1, which is 1, 1, minus 1, and 0. So this will be my vector. I'll call this v1. This is my vector v2 now. So these are my new vectors. Now, I want to construct an orthogonal basis for the orthogonal complement. Now, first of all, I'm going to get I'm going to do it one way, which is might seem a little odd, but it's going to be just a nice application of the Gram-Schmidt process. I claim that if you take I claim that the vectors, I want to write down a basis now for W, which contains these two. So I claim that 1, 1, minus 1, 0, 2, 2, 4, 3. Now I want to add two vectors to make up a basis for R4. So I want a set of four linearly independent vectors starting with these two. So I take the simplest ones. I'll take E1, 1, 0, 0, 0. And let me take, so if I do that, in effect, I can get rid of from all the previous two, the first components. I can wipe those out. And I still have stuff in the last, see, that if I look at, let me take 0, 1, 0, 0. I claim these are a basis for R4. Well, you can see that very easily because if I subtract from the first two, you can do by Gaussian elimination. So if I subtract the third from the first, I get rid of the first zero. And if I subtract the last one from the, you should just do just a check on the side. Let me just do a very quick check on the side here. If I take 1, 0, 0, 0, and then 0, 1, 0, I don't need commas because I have a matrix here. So I'm just going to do a very quick on the side, quick calculation here. I'll take 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, and then I'm going to write these two vectors, 1, 1, minus 1, 0, and then 2, 2, 4, 3. And then let me just very quickly bring it to echelon form. I can get rid of 0 here, 1, minus 1, 0. And here I get rid of, I can get rid of the two and the first two, 0, 0, and I won't check the other three. And then if I just add four times, should be a zero. Okay. Because I've subtracted the sum of the first two rows from the third, and the sum, and the, did I do it quickly? One, yeah, it's zero, that won't be affected. Two, and two, yeah. And then if you add four times, so if you do 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0, 0, minus 1, 0, and add four times the third row to the fourth, you'll get 0, 0, 0, 3. Okay? And so you get a vector with no zero rows. So anyway, that's the proof. This you do on the side. You wouldn't, if you had to check these things, you should just do it on the side. So let me just get rid of this calculation that I would do on my scratch paper. Okay. So this is a basis. It will always work that you can find at least, if you have two vectors and they're linearly dependent in R4, at least two of the vectors E1, E2, E3, E4 will always work. You just have to find which two. A little experimentation. And why I took the E1, E2 is because they're very simple vectors to work with. Now what I want to do is this is my vector V1. V2, let me call this U1, and this is my vector U2 here. This looks like we're in the process. Basically, what I want to do now, I want to replace U1 and U2 by vectors which are perpendicular to W. And we know how to do that by using the Gram-Schmidt process. So for example, let's call V3 equals, I'm going to take U1 and subtract off from it its orthogonal projection onto W. So that's going to give me a vector perpendicular to W, and it will And if I do that, so I'm going to get 1, 0, 0, 0 minus the inner product of U1 with V1, which is 1 over the length of V1, which is square of the length of V1, which is 3, 1, 1, minus 1, 0. And then I have to subtract off from that the inner product of U1 with V2, which is 2, divided by the inner product of V2 with itself, which is what? Oops, that's big. Okay. 16 plus 9 is 25 plus 4, 29 plus 4, 33, I guess, eh? Times V2, which is 2, 2, 4, 3. Okay. So that's my V3, and if you want to work it out, well, I don't know if I'll have... So here the common denominator, I guess, is 33. So I'll take out, well, actually, I can take out, say 33. So I'll give you 1 over 33. And in this case, it will, I don't know, maybe it would have been easier to do it the other way, as I can see, but I just wanted to go through this exercise in doing it this way. So I'm going to get, it's going to be 33 minus 11 minus 4. 33 minus, what is it? 33 minus 11, which is 22, minus 4, which is 18. And then I'm going to get minus 11, minus 11, minus 4, minus 15. And the next one I'm going to get 11 minus 8, which is 3. And then the last one I'm going to get just minus 6. Okay. So that's the that should be a vector which is orthogonal to V1 and V2. First one's okay. And V2, oh, that's 36 minus 30 is 6 plus 12, 18 minus 18 is 0. So it's okay. And if I want to get V4, I'll take U2 minus its projection onto W of U2. Which will be 0, 1, 0, 0 minus the inner product of U2 with V1 is 1 divided by, so this will be 3, 1, 1, minus 1, 0, and then minus inner product of V2 with U2, which is going to give you 2 over, again, 33. 2, 2, 4, 3. And this works out, again, 1 over 33, which is what? So I'm going to get minus 11 minus 22 minus 33 and get 11 minus 4. Minus 15. And then the other one I'm going to have is 33 minus 11, which is 22, minus 4, which is 18. And then 11 minus 8, which is 3. And then the last one is minus 6. So they just kind of scramble a bit. But they're still, they're still orthogonal vectors. They're still orthogonal. So anyway, you always should check, because you just take U4 and V4 and V3 should be orthogonal to V1 and V2, and they are. But they don't have, they're not orthogonal to each other yet, because we didn't really, we just worried about, we subtract off from V3 and V1. Now you can check here that V3 and V4 are certainly here, they're certainly still linearly independent, because the space spanned by the V1, V2 is the same as the space spanned by V1, V2, V3, V4, and that's four-dimensional. And so V3 and V4 have to be linear, and they're an orthogonal complement. So here, you can right away, those vectors that you got by modifying the U1 and U2 that you added there, which were just those unit vectors, by subtracting from those unit vectors their orthogonal projections onto W, you made them orthogonal. And you still get, the vectors remain linearly independent. Well, you can see they're not scalar multiples of one another. You can check, that, for example. So this is the span of the vectors 18 minus 15, 3 minus 6, and the vectors minus 15, 18, 3, and minus 6. And so this is the solution space. So this implies that, for example, now we know that W is W perp, W things are perpendicular, and so we know that this implies that W is a solution space of the system of equations in this particular case, minus 15 x1 plus 18 x2 plus 3 x3 minus 6 x4 equals 0, 18 x1 minus 15 x2 plus 3 x3, whoops, I read them in the wrong order, minus 15, 18 minus 3 minus 6, and I have to take 18 minus 15, I get them, let's see, minus 15, 18, 3 minus 6, and the other one is 18 minus 15, 3 minus 6, okay. So if you take, so in other words, you see these are hyper, each of these is a hyperplane. That is, it's a hyperplane. It's the same solution set of a single equation R4. It's what we call a hyperplane. It's not a plane. It's not two-dimensional, but it's three-dimensional. That's why we call it the hyper. So it's a hyperplane, a three-dimensional thing in R3. These two three-dimensional things in R3 that intersect in this two-dimensional thing, which is W. So we've represented W as an intersection of two hyperplanes. And it's a general fact that any homogeneous, any subspace of Rn is an intersection of hyperplanes in this way. You do it in the same, it comes as a consequence. So this is a way of actually, if you have a parametric description for a system of equations, for a vector space, you can represent it as a solution space of a system of equations. Either way, so you have this kind of dual way of writing writing down or representing a subspace, either parametrically or as solutions of a system of equations. We've done it just for homogeneous, but one, you can generalize this to non-homogeneous as well. Okay. Are there any questions about that? Now I want to go a little bit more. I want to give an idea of what orthogonal projections are for, why they're useful. One of the main applications is to, for example, least squares or best fit line or best fit, and I'll explain that in a minute. But I wanted to give a geometric interpretation of the orthogonal projection. So let's go on to the next. So I want to give a geometric characterization of the orthogonal projection. on the subspace W. So if we just draw a picture, here's the origin. This would be our W, and we take our vector. This would be our vector V here, and this is the picture that you should have. This vector, what we call that, we call this W1 here. This W1, and so W1 is the projection, orthogonal projection onto W of V, and the vector up here, this is V, this is what we call W2, and W2 is the projection of V perpendicular to W. Call that perp WV, which is V minus the projection WV. So we have V is W1 plus W2, and we have W1 belongs to W, and W1 dot W2 equals 0. So we have this nice little right angle triangle sitting up in this n-dimensional space. Okay. Now, what I claim is, if I take any other vector in W, what should you expect? I mean, this vector W1 is a certain vector in W. If I did it in the plane, what is another characterization of that orthogonal projection? If I take the distance between that point and that point, what can I say about that distance? It's the shortest distance to the plane. In other words, I replace W1 by any other thing, I should get something which is further away, a point further away from this point than this point. And this is what I want to show. I claim that the orthogonal projection of V onto W gives a vector W1 in W such that the length of the vector V minus W1 is short as possible. That's the characterization I want. So I claim that W1 is the unique vector of W, of capital W. Such that, well, V minus W1, the norm, that's the length of V minus V1. That's the length of that vector. So if I take a, let me put that somewhere else here. Let me take another, not V1. Is smallest possible. In other words, W1 is the best approximation to V by a vector in W. It's the closest thing you can get to V by a vector in W. That's the idea of approximation. You'll see this is going to come in handy when we talk about least squares in a minute. As small as possible. So how do I prove that? Let me just prove that. Indeed, if W is any vector in W, then I can write this V minus W. I can write this as V minus W1 plus W1 minus W. Okay. So I'm just going to add and subtract a term W1 there. Okay. That W1 is the one I want. Now, what can I say about these two vectors, this one and this one? What are those vectors are? Well, V minus W1, that's W2. This is my vector W2 here. And that's orthogonal to any vector in W. That's orthogonal to any vector in W. Well, let me put a square here. That's orthogonal to any vector in W. So I have now, inside here, I have a sum of two vectors, and we can call this something, this vector U. I have these two vectors, W2 and U, are W2 dot u is 0, because u is in w, and w1 is perpendicular, w2 is perpendicular to w. So the inner product is 0. So in other words, I have a sum of two squares, I have a sum of two vectors, which is orthogonal, and I want to take the square of the sum of the length. Now there's a very nice theorem, which is a generalization of the Pythagoras theorem, which says that this is the sum, this is equal to w2 squared plus u squared. So in other words, let's just write down as a theorem. And this is actually Pythagoras in n dimensional. Pythagoras would probably roll over in his sleep. He knew that we were proving his theorem in Rn. Here's the proof, and it's very nice. Okay. If V1 is perpendicular to V2, then this implies, well, actually, it's if and only if. The square of the length of V1 plus V2, which is the hypotenuse. If you take the vectors V1 and V2, okay, and then you join them, the hypotenuse, then, so in other words, I'll just write the picture in a minute, squared equals V1 squared plus V2 squared. And you can just draw a little picture here. So you, here you have your vector V1, and here you have your vector V2, and here you have the sum of the two vectors. And so this is also V2 here. And this is V1 plus V2. So in other words, I'm saying that V1 and V2 are orthogonal. In other words, that's a right angle if and only if the square of the hypotenuse is the sum of the squares of the adjacent sides. That's exactly Pythagoras' theorem. So let's just prove that. So we do that very simply by, let's just give the proof. Let's take V1 plus V2 squared and just write it. That's V1 plus V2. I think you've already done this. Dot V1 plus V2, which is V1 squared plus V1 dot V2 plus V2 dot V1. And then so that's plus twice V2 or V1 dot V2 plus V2 squared, the length. Well, V1 squared, I mean V1 dot V1. That's what I mean. So I'll write you for short. V squared is V dot V. So this is the length of V1 squared plus twice V1 dot V2 plus the length of V2 squared. So now we're done, right? Because when is that the sum of the square of V1 and V is sum? So this is equal to, V1 squared plus V2 squared, if and only if the thing in the middle is zero. QED. That's the shortest proof of Pythagoras' theorem that you'll see. It varies.
That's on the top next to Pythagoras, V1 dot V2 is zero.
Oh, yes. Disappeared. Okay, so V1 dot V2 equals zero. In other words, the square of the length of the hypotenuse of a triangle is the sum of the squares of the sides adjacent to the angle, if that angle there is 90 degrees. That's what that says. Okay. And so we see that, let's go back to what we have. So therefore we see that going back to what we have, we remember now we have, let's go back to what we've shown here. We have V minus W squared is then equal to V is equal to, we just said it was equal to W2 squared plus V squared. So this was equal to, let's just write this out, W2 squared plus the square of the length of U, which is W1 minus W squared. So this is certainly greater than or equal to W2 squared. And with equality, when do you have equality? When do you have equality here? You have equality precisely when the square of the norm of W1 minus W is 0. Or W equals W1. And that's it. So in other words, to get the best approximation to V by a vector in W, you should take W to be W1, which is the orthogonal projection of V onto W. So you see that. I mean, it's very clear geometrically in R3, but the same process works in Rn. It's the same proof, no change. So that's a really important characterization of the orthogonal projection. Sometimes that's the way it's defined. But if you define it that way, you don't have a nice formula. So if you want a nice formula, you have to find another characterization for it. And the characterization is to writing a vector V as something in W plus something perpendicular to W is the best way of doing that. Now, I just want to give an application very quickly of least square, application to least squares, to line of best fit. So supposing we have a set of points. Let me take 4 points. So I'll take points x1, y1, say x2, y2, x3, y3, x4, y4. So I have 4 points in the plane. So you're given, it doesn't matter, 4, could be 5, could be any number. So you're given 4 points in the plane. What we want is that we want to find the line which best fits those points. Okay, so that's what we're trying to do. Now we want to find a line which goes through these points in the best way. Well, I don't know. Okay. Well, clearly in this particular case, there's no line that's going to go through all the points. So let's just see. Let's just try to find. So the line, the equation of a line in R3 in the plane. So y equals, say, mx plus b is the equation of a line in R2. Now, if this line were to pass through all of those 4 points, so in other words, this line passes through the given points, if and only if, well, you have mx1 plus b equals y1, mx2 plus b equals y2, mx3 plus b equals y3, and mx4 plus b equals y4. That is, if and only if you have the vector y1, y2, y3, y4 can be written as a linear combination mx1, x2, x3, x4 plus b into 1, 1, 1. But in general, that's not possible, right? I mean, it's not. You can't do it. So what does it mean to find the line of best fit? So what I would like to do, I'd like to choose the M and the B. So if if it does not pass, so if the line, if no line passes through, in other words, if the line, if the point, if no line passes through, the given points, we want to find the we want to find the line of best fit. Now, what does I mean by best fit in this particular case? Which means that I want to choose the M and the B. If it were to pass through those four, I could choose the M and the B such that I could solve that system. I could write that vector. So here I have this vector. I have these two vectors. 1, 1, 1. And now this is an R4. We had a problem in the plane. It's a plane problem. I have four points. So I have these two points now in R4, x1, x2, x3, x4, which consist of the x coordinates of my points, which I'm assuming they're not equal. And then I have the vector 1, 1, 1, 1, those things. And to solve my problem, to find the line which goes through those points, I just have to write that vector, the ordinates, y1, y2, y3, y4, as a linear combination of x1, x2, x3, x4, plus 1, 1, 1, 1. But if they don't, I can't. So what would I want to do? I want the best approximation to y1, y2, y3, y4, such that this holds. So I want to choose the M and the B such that the distance between, such that this on the right-hand side is closest to 1. In the sense, here, this means that we want to minimize the norm. Let's call this vector here. Let's call this vector y. Let's call this vector x. And let's call this vector u. Let's call this one. So the norm of y minus m x. Oh, x is bad. I used already. Let me use capitals then. Let's call this the vector y. Let's call this vector x. And we'll call that the vector u for unit vector. No, it's not unit, but u. Such that y minus m x plus u, this norm, is smallest possible. Now, if you look at it, what you're doing, you're looking at the line, you're looking at the ordinates, and what you're trying to do is you actually, if you look at yi minus mx1, so if you had a line, if you had that line, let's go back to the diagram here. If you have a line, then if you look at a point on the line, what you're doing is you're taking the vertical distance to the line. So if you take a point x, y on the line, what you're doing is, so if you're taking a if you're taking that line, what you're minimizing is the sum of the squares of the distances of vertical distances to the line. And you want to minimize the sum of those things. So this is actually what's going on. But anyway, there is a geometrical interpretation. As small as possible. Okay. And to do that, we know we have a formula for that. So instead of solving y, so therefore we want mx plus u to be the orthogonal projection. To be the orthogonal projection of y, which is a given vector, the projection onto the, say, let's call this w of the vector y, where W is the span of the vectors x and u. So now we out of the x coordinates, we made a vector, capital X. Out of the ones, we have this vector at all ones. And we look at W, the span of those two. And what we want to do is, instead, we know we can't solve that system of equations with the right-hand sides equal to the y's, because those points, are, those ordinates are not points on the line. So what we do is replace the y's by the orthogonal projection of the y's onto the subspace spanned by the vectors x and u. I think there's a should be a minus sign here. And then you see, then, okay. Now this, now you can actually do this. You can actually find your orthogonal projection of y into w, and then once you've done that, then you can solve for, oh, there's a b missing, eh? Bu, sorry. Oops, wrong place. I'm missing b. Plus bu, mx plus bu. So in other words, mx plus bu cannot be written, y can never be mx plus bu for any choice of m and b because it's, they don't lie in a line. So what I'm going to do is instead of y, I'm going to replace y by its orthogonal projection under the span of x and u. And now I can solve. Now I can solve for b and u. So then solve for m and b. Okay. To get the equation of the y. Okay. So the procedure is quite simple. I don't give you any simple formulas. There are formulas out there for lines of best fit. There are regression formulas, whatever. This is just a down-to-earth way of actually doing it. An example, you can just do it quite quickly, just by this process. Okay. Okay, we'll start.